What do you think, Jack? You think if you pick up all the bus driver's teeth, they'll give you another medal? You think I wouldn't have been prepared? 2 years I spent setting up that elevator job. 2 years I invested myself in it. You couldn't understand the kind of commitment that I have. You ran a man's life's work, and you think you can walk away. You got blinders on to the world. But I got your attention now, didn't I, Jack?
Why didn't you just come after me?
No, this is about me. This is about my money. This is about money due me, which I will collect. $3.7 million. It's my nest egg, Jack. At my age, you've got to think ahead.
When I find you...
Pop quiz, hotshot. There's a bomb on a bus. Once the bus goes 50 miles an hour, the bomb is armed. If it drops below 50, it blows up. What do you do? What do you do?
I'd want to know what bus it was.
You think I'm going to tell you that?
Yes.
Very good. There are rules, Jack, and I want you to get this right. No one goes off the bus. You try to take any passengers off the bus, I will take it.
Hey, Adrenal Heads, welcome back to the show. I'm Mark.
And I'm Kelly.
And this episode, we're going to be covering Speed from 1994. And Kelly chose this movie, which I'm so glad she did, because this is actually one of the movies that I wanted to start off Adrenaline Cinema a couple of years ago when I started this podcast, and it was one of the first movies I thought of, but just never got around to. But I'm glad that Kelly brought it up, and thank you, Kelly, for bringing it. I was like, wow, somebody actually picked it. Awesome. We get to cover this.
I was surprised that you hadn't covered it already.
So. Yeah, same here. Nobody really wanted to do it.
It's one of my favorites, so I'm excited.
Yeah, same here. So with that, we'll move right along to the synopsis. Do you want me to read the synopsis or shall you?
You can go ahead.
Sure. So the synopsis of this movie, for those of you who have not watched Speed, so keep in mind, this is a spoiler-full podcast, but honestly, come on, the movie's almost 30 years old. It's 28 years old, if you think about it. So the movie synopsis is Los Angeles police officer Jack, played by Keanu Reeves, angers retired bomb squad member Howard Payne, played by Dennis Hopper, by foiling his attempt at taking hostages. In revenge, Payne arms a bus with a bomb that will explode if it drops below 50 miles per hour. With the help of spunky passenger Annie, played by Sandra Bullock, Jack and his partner Harry, played by Jeff Daniels, try to save the people on the bus before the bomb goes off, while also trying to figure out how Payne is monitoring them. Now, this is a synopsis I grabbed off of IMDb, but I'm sure there's others out there that could be extremely vague, very simplistic, but this one is like, it's to the point. But honestly, given the fact that the movie's almost 30 years old, I'm sure somebody's seen it before, especially with Keanu Reeves' movie legacy that he has in action films. So with that, we're going to move right along and go right into the people we may know within the film. So, Kelly, why don't you start us off with the first one?
Okay, Keanu Reeves, who plays Jack Traven. We know Keanu from such movies like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Point Break, Dracula, and the Matrix movie series. The John Wick movie series, and he's been a big star for years, and many of us know his name. Movies that he has in development are John Wick Chapter 4 and 5. Is that like Berserker?
Yep, Berserker.
A film adaptation of his comic book series that is out in comic shops now. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Actually, the character is modeled after Keanu Reeves.
Oh.
So it looks just like him.
And Constantine 2, he's reprising his role from the movie he did back in 2005.
Yeah. So we got a lot more movies with Mr. Keanu Reeves himself in to look forward to in the coming years. Next up would be Sandra Bullock, a well-known actress who, you know, she plays Annie. Obviously, I didn't put that in there, but well, she has been acting since 1987. She's known for a lot of films over the years, like Love Potion Number 9 from 1992, which had Tate Donovan. It was a small little rom-com that they had back then. The Vanishing in 1993 with Kiefer Sutherland. That was an interesting movie. I found that was a nice suspenseful film.
Mm.
Demolition Man, which is another favorite of mine, from 1993 with Sylvester Stallone. Hopefully one day we'll actually cover that on this podcast. The Net in 1995, Practical Magic in 1998, and so much more. Yeah, we could go through all the list, but yeah, There'll be way too many movies. She has made a name for herself in Hollywood as an actress and producer. She has her own production company and has many shows and movies that are far too many here. Like I said before, it's a list. But I encourage everybody always to go out there and check out those movies on our IMDb page, because I'm sure there are some movies that you haven't. So,
yeah, she's one of my favorites. Love her. Dennis Hopper, who played, is it Howard?
Howard Payne. Okay. Yep.
A legendary actor that started his career in the 50s on TV shows, but made his film debut with the film Rebel Without a Cause in 1957. Cool Hand Luke in 1967 with Paul Newman, and Easy Rider in 1969. Apocalypse Now, 1979, and so much more. He had passed away at the age of 74 back in 2010.
Yep. A legend in movie films, and yeah, a very strange man from what I'm told.
But kind of comes across sometimes, I think.
It does, especially in his characters.
Yeah.
Well, next up is Jeff Daniels, who plays Harry, which is Keanu Reeves' partner within the film and friend. Jeff has been working in Hollywood since 1980 and started his career on an episode of Hawaii Five-O. Since then, he has been seen in a lot of films and television. To name just a few movies that we mostly know him from: Terms of Endearment from 1983, Arachnophobia, which is a cool horror comedy, 1990, Gettysburg, which is a more period piece, in 1993, and of course the Dumb and Dumber films. And then most recently, within years, other than regular TV, you know, performances and Netflix shows, The Martian 2015, which I really did enjoy. That's a great movie.
Yeah. Alan Ruck, who plays Jimmy the Tourist, has made over 100 appearances in films and television and on stage. He is best known for his role as the friend of Matthew Broderick and hopeless hypochondriac Cameron Fry in John Hughes' Ferris Bueller's Day Off from 1986, and Twister from 1996. He currently can be seen in a lot of TV shows. Yeah,
yep.
He's always a good character.
And last but not least would be Joe Morton. That would be Jack and Harry's boss from the movie. Joe has been a character actor in TV and film since 1970, and we've seen him in TV shows like Mission Impossible, Sanford and Son, MASH, What's Happening, and so much more. You'll recognize him mostly from the Terminator 2 Judgment Day movie in 1991, where he played Miles Dyson. And that's where I mostly recognize him from, because he played such a great role in that particular film. And I just love T2.
Yeah.
He was also in Of Mice and Men in 1992. Had a lot of good actors in that as well. I'm not going to name them, but go check that out. It was a good rendition. Obviously from Speed and Speed 2 Cruise Control that came out in 1997 as well. So he reprised his role. And there's so much more. Joe still continues to work within the business as an actor on TV, film, and voiceover work too. So you could hear him in cartoons.
Yeah, I recognize him from Scandal. That was the big one I watched him in.
Yeah, you know his face, you know his voice too. He's got that cool, crisp, deep voice that I like. And he's very articulate when he speaks, so I think that's why it makes him a perfect voice actor as well. All right, well, we're going to move right into our general thoughts of the movie. That's our memories of the movie, whether it be in film, when we first saw it, or what we think of it today. So, Kelly, why don't you enlighten us what your thoughts and how you remember or saw this film?
Okay. It is one of my favorite action movies ever, probably my favorite Keanu movie. I know. I mean, he's more known for other movies, but
Yeah.
I think it's the hair. Like, I love the haircut.
Yeah. And this one, he was a little bit more of a buzz cutty, more, you know, straight cut kind of guy. Whereas before in Point Break, he had the floppy hair, bro dude, even though he was an FBI agent and a former football player. So, yeah, I do see that, too. Well, with me, I have fond memories about this particular movie due to the fact it was my first date for me and my first time, long-time girlfriend at one point. We went out for almost 5 years, and it was a great action movie. I looked forward to it. I was playing in a lot of bands at the time, and I wasn't really hitting the movies as much, but I always loved going to the movies. So when I asked her out, I said, hey, why don't we go see this? So she liked the idea. She saw the advertisements and thought, okay. But luckily, and lo and behold, there was kind of a love story in the end, if you think about it. So it kind of worked out in me. But it's been one of my favorites over the years. I think I've seen this so many times over the years that when I was starting to write my notes for this particular podcast, I had it playing. I said, oh, I got to do a rewatch. I realized a quarter way through, I'm like, wait a minute, my notes are going ahead of what the movie is based upon my memory because it was so drilled in my brain. And I thought, that is so cool. I didn't really have to watch the movie, but I had it on anyway as I was writing my notes and I was gathering all the information and material for it, for the unknown facts and interesting facts, as well as the character actors. You know, what gave me the jolt for this, it was an action movie and Keanu Reeves was in it, and that's all that sold me on it when I had to go see it. And it's my go-to action film, like Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, all those cool movies that we love. And then, you know, we knew back then he was a budding action star when he did Point Break in 1991. Mm-hmm. That really is what kicked it off. And then since Speed, he's been speeding forward with his career, if you think about it, with The Matrix and everything else that's out there. He does come back to comedy, and he has a stronghold on comedy as well. But now he is Mr. John Wick himself, which Kat and I will be covering John Wick 3. Hopefully in the near future, we'll get back to that before John Wick 4 comes out. So basically, yeah. I think Keanu has cemented his role and as an action movie star over the years. And, you know, you can't go wrong when you watch an action movie with him in it.
This one, like the whole thing is just so intense. The pacing of it, like it's nonstop.
Yeah. Yeah. It's never ending. It doesn't give up. You have maybe one or two lulls. Mm-hmm. Like in the very beginning, it slowly ramps up with the elevator scene.
Yeah.
In the building when they're called into action. But by the end of when Howard is fooled and they're waiting on Howard to call. So that was the only lull period. It wasn't until, you know, Jack is in the subway system trying to hunt down where the money went and finds Annie. And then Howard is at his typical physical game with cat and mouse with Jack. But all right. Well, with that, jump right into favorite scenes or thoughts within the movie. So we'll start with you. What's your first point of favorite thoughts, I should say?
I do love the opening scene. Like even just the credits, like it just feels like it goes on forever, but it kind of ramps up the tension a little bit. You're trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And the way like Jack and Harry play off of each other and with their pop quiz and they kind of set the tone for the whole movie and Jack's quick thinking to, you know, get the hostages out of the situation.
Yeah, the equation of like, take the hostage out.
Yeah.
And he just shoots the hostage. And then even Harry goes, prick. <It's> like, when he shoots him. So you don't think that that's a surprise. But, you know, it was a little foreshadowing because we already had the conversation, the conversation before. So he knew. So
there's a few foreshadowing moments right there in that first scene.
Yep. With me, since that was part of mine, I'll go into mine. My first one would be Jack's commandeering of the guy's car to catch up with the bus. That was just comedic and action all at once. And I just loved it. He just destroys that guy's car. I just love how he goes, are you insured? Yeah. Breaks the door so he could jump onto the, you know, it wasn't until obviously he goes right on this note, bomb on bus. What? and then the paper flies and goes right on the windshield and he sees it. He's like, oh, and he's like going under. Oh, and then he just jumps on. And then, of course, you know, everybody in the bus is like, this guy really needs to get on this bus.
I know. I love the tourists, Jimmy, like taking pictures of everything.
Yep. It would be so cool if they actually had pictures of that for the anniversary edition on Blu-ray or DVD or something. It was like, yeah, this is what Jimmy took pictures of. your next one?
I mean, I think all the stunts were fantastic.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite is when they have to make the sharp right turn. I just love, like, you see the thought process, like, when Andy's like, we're going to flip over. And he's realizing, oh, we really are going to flip over. And gets him to all move to the one side. And then how he has to help her. And you feel, like, the chemistry between them, like, already in that moment.
Yeah, you could, with the banter that they have, when actually there's a conversation between Annie and Jack when they say, she goes, so what did you do? what did you do to piss him off or whatever? Yeah. And then basically it's like, he goes, it's a game. And if I beat this one, there's another one again. She goes, well, I can't help you tomorrow. I'm busy.
You know? I know. So, they had such great chemistry.
Yeah, it worked out right away. For me, one of the scenes terrified me even in the theater and still does to this day and always gives me a chill is when seeing the baby stroller and Annie goes through it because nobody's getting out of the way. And it was just a bunch of cans. And at least there was a bit of levity, but you could see the true shock and, you know, how she was scared and upset. And then he had to reassure her, it was cans. Yeah. And it's like, honestly, I wasn't sure if that person was homeless, but who really puts cans in
a stroller? Yeah. But yeah, her acting was so good. I just felt like she killed it.
Yeah. You have another one?
I mean, kind of like you, even though I've seen it so many times, I get so stressed out, like when he goes under the bus.
Oh.
Like, I know what's going to happen, but I'm still like, oh, how's he going to get out of it?
That stunt, I remember seeing behind the scenes footage on HBO and everything when this movie, you know, was out in the theaters. They would have behind the scenes in the movie Speed, and it's in theaters now. And I remember that, and the way they had to pull it off was crazy. Now, mind you, obviously they're not going to the amounts of speeds that the bus is supposed to be going when they do that stunt. But even still, a bit dangerous because you could get run over. But yeah, it's when the police are trying to move ahead and go in front of with a pickup going the same speed. And Jack gets on this little cart and goes underneath the bus.
Yeah.
And he's trying to disarm the bomb or check it out. And then he creates more problems, too, because he gets caught. Punctures the gas tank, and they wind up bringing him up. And, yeah. And, of course, you know, Ortiz says he's got big hairy cojones. And the funny thing about that character, Ortiz, he calls him Gigantor. And then a lot of the other people call him Gigantor. Now, I couldn't find anything regarding the reason why he called him Gigantor. The only thing I could think of is Gigantor is actually an anime film from Japan. Now, I know that Keanu Reeves is a anime fan as well as cyberpunk. So if you look at Ortiz, the actor who plays him, he's a very big dude, got that face, looks like the character Gigantor. So I'm thinking it's something that was improv for the film by Keanu Reeves, and it was thrown in there, and they just went with it, you know, but I don't know. But if you listeners know and have a clue, let us know in the notes below when I do release this, and you'll see it advertised on Facebook, and or you could just email us too. And we'll get that. How you could email us at the very end of the podcast. For me, another terrifying. I'm going through a lot of terrifying stuff. Helen getting blown up. That was hard to watch in the theater. But I knew even before the scene was coming up that something like that was going to happen mm-hmm. while watching and in the movie theater. Then I realized that Howard was watching them with a remote camera, and that mm-hmm. was before they even realized it. And which was always fascinating to me based on its time. Because he even says it's Wave of the Future, you know, for the media mm-hmm. at that time. And because now we can all easily do that in some way.
Yeah.
With like small everyone micro cameras. Yeah. Everybody has yeah. a phone. Everything mm-hmm. is on media. So this was ahead of its time to some degree. But it also, if you remember the movie The Chase with Charlie Sheen and Christy Swanson with okay. the Buffy yeah. the Vampire Slayer, it had Anthony yep. Kiedis and that. That was a chase movie just the same, but they also had the same thing. It was always, they had media over them. They yeah. always had the helicopters. They was always on TV. But they didn't have anything where they could look at it, what was going on. All they had was the radio.
Well, so I love that, how Jack figures it out, like by her sweater.
Yep,
like her
jacket. Yep, the wild. He called you a wildcat. Yeah. Arizona Wildcats, great team. And he looks and he sees the mm-hmm. camera and he goes, "We're being watched." And then he figures it out, mm-hmm. and then they come up with the cool plan.
Yeah,
you have another.
I mean, there was a jump. That's a huge stunt.
That was my next one too. Making that big jump across the missing part of the freeway, and I guess they fell behind, as one of the police officers said. Yeah. And it's a big one, Jack. Mm-hmm. It was, and then they were like, they realized that they had to speed up and jump it. Mm-hmm. There was no way around it. They couldn't turn around at that speed, especially if they had both lanes cleared.
Yeah.
So it was a prey, but for them to pull that off, and you're talking at a time when CG was in practice, mm-hmm. normally used for these kind of movies, they actually had to jump this bus with very similar to like what they did with The Dark Knight. In The Dark Knight, they had a truck mm-hmm. that had to flip over, and they put like a pole in there that they launched down. In this case, they had to do something with ramps and do something to push and mm-hmm. launch it up. And go to that speed of that's needed to make that jump across that space. And I'm forgetting. We'll find out in the unknown facts or interesting facts regarding that of exactly how they did. I'm pretty sure I didn't read them, but they're probably there. You have anything else or
do you have more?
Oh, I have a ton more.
Yeah.
Okay. If you want to just talk about it, it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's, okay. Well, the airport, as they're driving around in circles on mm-hmm. 50 miles per hour, but, you know, Jack gets off, does the cart thing, and they find the video. But the slide with Annie and Jack at the very end when rigged the wheel and with the brick and the brace for the gas for it to keep going. But that slide with the like the little hatch with the rope and it slings off the wheel. And I'm pretty sure as I was watching it in the theater, I knew right away. It's like there's wheels under there. There's got to be wheels under there to get them going that way. But even still with the stuntman, I was worried about that for the fact that you get caught up in wheels and mm-hmm. things of that nature and just boom and just they could get really hurt. I'm sure it was staged at a speed that was controlled to some degree. I would believe that they would actually have somebody either remote controlling the bus or mm-hmm. at least have somebody that they could cover up that was driving it. So it's mm-hmm. at a steady straightaway so that they could go through it.
Yeah.
But thinking about it as they were coming off with the scrapes, the bruises and everything that they get after that, the road, it's like literally heavy road rash.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I would think there would be more scuffed up regarding that.
Then there's the end scene with the train. Like,
yes. Yeah. The ending scene.
Speed it up again.
Yep, speed it up again. Basically, Howard taking Annie as hostage puts a bomb around her on a vest, and Jack constantly following them as they get on the train,
mm-hmm.
but ultimately locks her to a pole in the middle of the train, and he had already done away with Howard up on top with the battle scene on the top of the train.
Yeah, the decapitation, that was...
The decapitation. Pretty. And, of course...
I'd forgotten about that. I was like, wow, that's pretty intense. Yep.
Yeah, he just, like, lifts up, looks, and his head goes bye-bye. And then Jack comes in through the top and she goes, where's Payne? He lost his head or something.
I know. Some of the one-liners in those are pretty classic.
Yeah. I think I actually had that down here. But that's about it for me with like favorite moments within the actual film itself. If you have any others that you've come to mind, you're more than welcome to throw them in there.
No, that was pretty much it. I mean.
All right, cool. So with that, we'll move right along into interesting and unknown facts about the movie Speed 1994. So if you want to take us away with the first one that's there.
Okay. Sandra Bullock learned to drive a bus for the film. As well as being a breakthrough role for leading man Keanu Reeves, Speed was a career turning point for Sandra Bullock. The hitherto little-known actress landed the role not long after appearing alongside Sylvester Stallone in Demolition Man. As Annie, the recently banned driver who finds herself behind the wheel of a bus, Bullock needed to be a convincing driver. While the bulk of the actual driving was done by a professional stunt driver, Bullock still took lessons in bus driving. As part of promotions for the movie, the actress even took a Los Angeles bus driving test for real and passed. It must have been nice to know she had something to fall back on if the acting thing didn't work out.
Well, she still can, but I think she's got too many things to do in this world. Miss Congeniality is not going to actually drive a bus for a living, I don't think.
No.
Next up, the bus was actually driven by stuntman on roof. So as you might expect for the movie, that's largely set on the bus. The crew on Speed made a lot of use of buses, a veritable armada of them, in fact. Different buses were used for different scenes, being specifically modified to suit the various stunt requirements. Reportedly, a total of 10 different buses were used throughout production on the action extravaganza. Most of those buses were equipped with two steering wheels, one in the usual place and another on the roof. Whilst Sandra Bullock sat in the driver's seat, a stunt driver on the roof of the bus was really in control. Speed's buses are now an iconic part of movie history, as demonstrated when one of them was sold in 2018 for more than $100,000. Wow. I wonder if Carrie Fisher's brother has one of those, because he was like one of those people that collected cars and vehicles from movies. You know, he had a Knight Rider, he had a DeLorean, he had a whole bunch of others from film history. So I'm curious.
Keanu Reeves initially turned down the film, thinking it was a Die Hard ripoff. Reeves came to Speed after appearing in a number of smaller, quirkier films geared toward a less mainstream audience. These included Shakespeare adaptation of Much Ado About Nothing and the religious drama Little Buddha. As such, the character of Jack Traven was a bit of a break from the norm for Reeves, even considering his earlier action hero role in Point Break. When he was initially offered the starring role in Speed, Keanu Reeves turned it down as he thought it felt too generic and too much like Die Hard. There was no shortage of action movies playing on the Die Hard format at the time, including Under Siege and Passenger 57. It wasn't until Joss Whedon was brought in to rewrite the script that Reeves accepted, though Speed continues to be affectionately termed Die Hard on a Bus by movie fans.
Yep, it is. I think they actually mentioned that in Community, the TV show. The next one up, 20th Century Fox blacklisted Keanu Reeves for 14 years after he turned down Speed 2. Interesting. While Speed is remembered as one of the greatest 90s action films, the same cannot be said of its 1997 sequel, Speed 2 Cruise Control. Set aboard a hijacked cruise ship, the mega-budget follow-up, again directed by Jean Dabant, teams Bullock and Jason Patrick, Lost Boys, if you don't remember, and was a critical and commercial disaster. Yes, it was. I was there. I saw it in the theater. It's also notable for the absence of Keanu Reeves as Jack Traven. The actor who was not contractually obliged to make a sequel turned it down over dissatisfaction with the script. Well, just about anyone who's seen Speed 2 can understand Reeves' decision. It didn't go down well with the executives at 20th Century Fox. The studio blamed Reeves' departure for Speed 2's box office failure and immediately banned him from appearing in any further Fox production. The studio wouldn't make peace with Reeves until 2008, when they cast him in the lead of a sci-fi remake, The Day the Earth Stood Still. Now, I'm sure that's something that me and Jerry will probably mention when we get to one of those Ray Harryhausen films. But my opinion about The Day that the Earth Stood Still, not very good either. It was like, interesting, yeah. Good concept, but please don't call it that. It's just another movie.
Stephen Baldwin was the first choice to play Jack Traven. Considering what an enduring star Keanu Reeves has proved to be, it's hard to envisage anyone else headlining Speed today. However, back when the film was first in development, executives at 20th Century Fox weren't convinced about Reeves' star power. Instead, the studio had their eye on someone they considered to be a more bankable leading man at the time, Stephen Baldwin. A sibling of big-name actors Alec and William Baldwin, plus a comparatively lesser-known Daniel, Stephen Baldwin was a hot and upcoming actor in the mid-90s. However, Baldwin declined the role of Jack Traven because he got the same first impression as Reeves, that the material was too reminiscent of Die Hard. Soon after Speed, Baldwin enjoyed his biggest success in 1995's Oscar-winning hit, The Usual Suspects. But his status in Hollywood fell significantly in the years following. Yeah, he probably made a mistake, but yeah, wouldn't be the same movie with him either.
Yeah, also he did Biodome too with Pauly Shore, so I think that kind of killed it as well.
Yeah.
Though, you got to watch that just for how stupid it is. Next up, Reeves smashed the bus door by accident. Once Reeves accepted the role of Jack Traven, he really threw himself into it, getting into fighting fit shape. The actor also insisted on doing as many of his own stunts as he could, reportedly doing about 90% of the action himself. Wow, that's really putting himself into it. As is inevitably the case when tackling dangerous action, things occasionally went a little wrong, although thankfully without any serious injuries on this production. Near the start of the film, Keanu Reeves' Jack Traven is chasing the bus to try and get on and smashes the door window. This was a complete accident, but it wound up being left in the film as it looked great on screen. In a year since, Reeves has continued to do as many of his own stunts as possible in The Matrix as well as the John Wick franchises. Awesome.
Keanu Reeves and Jeff Daniels received real SWAT training prior to filming. Today, Keanu Reeves is famous for his extensive training in martial arts and firearms for his action-oriented roles. While he had already undergone some training of this kind for 1991's Point Break, Speed took things to a new level for the actor. Reeves' co-star Jeff Daniels, meanwhile, is far better known for tackling less physical roles. He appeared in Dumb and Dumber the same year as Speed. Yeah. Playing SWAT team officers was something neither Reeves nor Daniels had done on film before. As is often the case for such major films, the actors underwent training with real SWAT team members in preparation. This was to ensure that the actors moved correctly and operated their weapons and equipment in a convincing way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like they do a good job.
Yeah, they did a great job. Yeah. And the way Harry walks into Payne's home with the rest of the SWAT, I really like that. He got the maneuvers right, and I really enjoyed that. Unfortunately, we lost Harry at the same time. Audiences walk backwards to the toilet in order to keep their eyes on the action. All right. I'm thinking I'm one of them when that happened. I probably would still do it if I went to see this at the drive-in.
Yeah.
We often hear horror stories from Hollywood screen tests, which can leave the filmmaker scrambling to re-edit, reshoot as much as possible. In the case of Speed, however, the test screening experience was very much the opposite. Studio executives have been quoted saying they saw audience members who needed the bathroom walking backwards as they went, so as not to miss too much of the action as they were going to the bathroom. On the spaces, the top brass of 20th Century Fox knew that speed was a bona fide crowd pleaser in these early screenings. The final subway train crash had not been filmed in its entirety due to budget reasons, and storyboard stills were used. That's interesting. So they didn't really get to see that part
yet.
Didn't
have it.
The enthusiastic response of the test audiences was enough to convince the studio to cough up the extra cash to finish this climactic sequence. Mm. Awesome.
Yeah. Next, Halle Berry and Ellen DeGeneres were considered for Annie before Sandra Bullock. Mm. Considering what a huge star Sandra Bullock is now, it's easy to forget that she was almost unknown back in 1994. This being the case, the actress was not the first choice to take the part of Annie in Speed. The character had originally been written as African-American, and the first actress offered the part was Halle Berry. In later rewrites, Annie was reworked into a more comic relief character whose relationship with Jack is platonic, at which point Ellen DeGeneres was considered. In the end, Annie kept both her comedic aspects and her romantic interaction with Jack, and Jean Dupont push for Sandra Bullock's casting. The top brass at 20th Century Fox were resistant to this at first because Bullock was not considered a bankable star, but they eventually conceded. I cannot imagine like Ellen in that role.
Me neither. Yeah. But then again, you had Halle Berry, and I could see that, but
yeah.
I think she was in the beginning of her career at that point or being known. Mm-hmm. This is long before a whole bunch of other movies that she had done, like X-Men and everything else that created, like action sequences and things of that nature. Next up, Harry was originally the villain. Interesting. The great deal of Speed's heart comes from the kinship between Keanu Reeves, Jack, and Jeff Daniels, Harry. However, in screenwriter Graham Yost's original script, things took a dark turn regarding Daniels' lovable character. Harry originally was going to be the film's real bad guy, with Dennis Hopper's Howard Payne merely serving as an accomplice.
Hmm. That would have been interesting.
Weird. Yeah. This was still the plan until only a month or so before cameras started rolling on the film. In the end, though, Yost realized that this revealed strained credibility and was just a big switch for the sake of switch. As such, Harry remained a sympathetic character and wound up a martyr rather than a villain. And I prefer it that way.
Yeah, yeah, it would have been too many. Like this had a twist first. Twist fake. Yeah. Originally, the bus was going to travel at 20 miles per hour. As well as having Harry turn out to be a villain, the original script for Speed differed from the end product in some notable ways. For one thing, it was at first entitled Minimum Speed, until Graham Yost realized you don't want the word minimum in the title of anything.
That would have been a slow action film.
Yeah. Rather more significantly, in Yost's original vision, the bomb on the bus was to be armed as soon as the vehicle exceeded 20 miles per hour. However, as this is generally a very safe speed for a motor vehicle to travel at, Yost was talked out of this. According to the screenwriter, a friend of his suggested it would be far more exciting if the bus couldn't drop below 50 miles per hour. Yost agreed and rewrote the script accordingly, but further revisions would be made before the film was underway.
I can't believe it. 20 miles, come on. Yeah. Go, Kark, go faster than that. Jean Dupont demanded Keanu Reeves get a haircut for the film. So Keanu Reeves had risen to fame in the late 80s as Ted Theodore Logan in sci-fi comedy classic Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and its sequel. He followed this with roles in such hits as My Own Private Idaho, Bram Stoker's Dracula, which I love too, and Point Break. All those films had one thing in common: Reeves' lovely long locks and cutting the curl style that was so popular in the early 90s. Then it came time for Speed. However, the director, Jean Dupont, insisted that Reeves chop off his trademark long hair, positioning that crop look better fit a hard-working and tough cop. Reeves complied, but the buzz cut the actor went for was considered somewhat severe by the standards of the early 90s.
little bit.
Indeed, studio executives at 20th Century Fox were so shocked by Reeves' new look that they initially threatened to postpone filming until his hair grew back. Wow. Did he go for like a true buzz cut, like a one inch or something?
Must have, yeah. The film was initially going to be set entirely aboard the bus. The bulk of Speed's running time takes place on the Los Angeles bus that is held at ransom by Dennis Hopper's bomber. In Graham Yost's original screenplay, literally the entirety of the film was set on board the speeding bus. However, executives at Studio 20th Century Fox felt that a little more variety was needed to keep the audience interested. With this in mind, Yost and director Jean DuPont put their heads together to come up with new sequences to top and tell the script. DuPont suggested opening on an elevator under siege, having had an unnerving experience getting trapped in an elevator himself. Then Yost decided the best way to follow up the speeding bus was to set the climax on a speeding subway train.
Yeah. Would give us two versions of speed, if you think about it, between the train and the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And then the thrill or excitement with the elevator in the very beginning to gear us up for it. So I think that was pretty cool. Well, Reeves was grief-stricken when friend River Phoenix died during the shoot. Speed proved to be a great career move for Keanu Reeves, but it was also a difficult experience for the actor for unexpected reasons. Reeves was busy shooting the movie in October 1993 when his friend River Phoenix died of multiple drug intoxication. Reeves and Phoenix had made two films together, I Love You to Death and My Own Private Idaho, and had grown very close. Phoenix's shocking death hit Reeves hard. The actor admitted, I have never felt a thing like that before in my life. I was very sad, something beyond sad. To allow the actor the time to grieve, the shooting schedule was rearranged, which was nice. Mm-hmm. But work on the film still continued regardless. The director recalls that Reeves became very quiet and took him quite a while to work it out by himself and calm down. Now, I remember hearing about this at that time, or just after the movie came out, and I knew that, you know, because you see all the E.T. Entertainment Tonight and all that stuff that they had on TV, you could tell they were all friends, and they all hung out, and I really thought My Own Private Idaho and I Love You to Death were really good. I Love You to Death was just a quirky, dark comedy.
Yeah.
And My Own Private Idaho was a really good drama between the both of them, and they did very well on it.
Yeah. River was so talented. It was a big loss.
It is a big loss.
At the time.
Still is a big loss, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. But I remember it hit me really hard back then.
Yeah.
Die Hard director John McTiernan turned the film down. Graham Yost says Speed was most influenced by 1985 thriller Runaway Train, but its debt to Die Hard is undeniable. Speed was a production of 20th Century Fox, the same studio behind Die Hard and its sequels. It shouldn't come as too great a surprise then that Die Hard director John McTiernan was the first filmmaker offered the helm on Speed. However, McTiernan considered the project a little too close in tone and content to Die Hard and turned it down. Instead, McTiernan himself suggested the Speed producers considered Jean DuPont, director of photography on Die Hard, and McTiernan's later film, The Hunt for Red October. Executives at 20th Century Fox decided to give DuPont the job, even though he had never made a film as director before. It was good that he helped him out.
Yeah, and we covered The Hunt for Red October here on Adrenaline Cinema, too. Next up, Quentin Tarantino turned down an offer to direct. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, that would have been a different
It would have been an interesting film if Quentin Tarantino did this. Before first-time director Jean DuPont was entrusted with the reins to Speed, another hot up-and-coming filmmaker was considered. The producers of Speed approached Quentin Tarantino, then red hot from his acclaimed, though controversial, debut film Reservoir Dogs, which I love. It's one of my favorite films. However, Tarantino declined the offer as he was busy in pre-production on his second movie, Pulp Fiction. This turned out to be a good move on Tarantino's part, as Pulp Fiction was a critical and commercial smash which earned him the Best Original Screenplay Oscar. Tarantino has never directed a film that he did not also write himself, so it's not surprising that he passed on Speed. However, in 2009, the filmmaker did list Speed among his 20 favorite films made since his career began in 1992, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a big honor. The famous bus jump was added late in production. As the name suggests, Speed keeps the action moving at a fast and furious pace, no pun intended. In the process, the movie sees the heavy-duty bus pull off some moves which some viewers and critics felt strained credibility. The most eye-opening and incredible of them all is the moment when the bus leaps over a break in the interstate. This spectacular stunt was not part of the original script, but director John DeBont decided to add the scene during production. The director was inspired when, during his journey to work one morning, he noticed sections of the freeway were under construction. Seeing an opportunity, DeBont proposed the idea to the cast and crew, and the jump was duly added.
Cool.
It's a big stunt to add in.
That was the biggest stunt that everybody remembers.
Yeah.
So it was a good thing he did. Joss Whedon wrote much of the movie's dialogue. So Speed was a brainchild of screenwriter Graham Yost, who penned and scripted that was set entirely on a bus rigged to explode. When director John DeBont boarded the project, he suggested changes, which Yost did his best to incorporate. However, everyone agreed that Yost's dialogue wasn't that great, so Joss Whedon was hired to do rewrites. Whedon, creator of the Buffy and the Vampire Slayer, and later director of Marvel's Avengers, is said to be responsible for 98% of the dialogue, which I believe, because it sounds just like what Whedon would put in his work. However, despite all the work he did on the film screenplay, Whedon isn't named in the credits. Interesting. This is not too unusual in Hollywood, where a great many writers make a living as script doctors. Mm. Which there are a lot of them out there. Carrie Fisher was actually one of them. So, which a lot of people don't know.
Yeah. Alan Rex Doug was originally a sleazy lawyer who got killed off.
Oh, it was Doug, not Jimmy.
Okay. Joss Whedon's rewrites on Graham Yost's screenplay for Speed resulted in some significant character developments. For one, the supporting character of bus passenger Doug was rewritten in a big way. Played by Alan Ruck of Ferris Bueller's Day Off fame, Doug is a tourist who comes off a bit overbearing but is ultimately sympathetic. However, as originally written, Doug was a very sleazy and obnoxious lawyer who was killed off midway through the film. Whedon recalls, "He was cast as that guy you hate, and he was very artificial. He was a lawyer, he was on the phone, and he was a bad guy, and he died. And I think Alan Ruck is a great comedian and a great actor, so I was like, why don't we just make him a tourist? A guy, just a nice, totally out-of-his-depth guy."
Made more sense. That's a good move. Yeah. It was a good move. We needed that...
That comic relief.
I thought he was the comic relief within the film. And it's like, especially when it's like, we're at the airport. Yeah. So I already seen it.
Yeah.
Well, the last one, the studio was so convinced Speed would be hit, they moved its release date forward. Whenever we hear about movies release dates being changed, more often than not, it's because the film is being delayed. Often a release date is pushed back to allow the filmmakers time to get it finished or to avoid competing with another potential major movie. We still see that to this day.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of Speed, however, 20th Century Fox had such confidence in the movie that they brought its release forward by 2 months. The studio abandoned the planned August 1994 release date and instead put it out in June, at the same time as City Slickers 2, The Legend of Curly's Gold. Even though City Slickers 2 was playing in more screens, Speed still wound up the bigger hit, going straight to number one on the box office. By the end of its run, Speed had earned over $350 million worldwide of the back of the budget in the range of $30 million, making it a very big hit indeed.
Yeah, big profit.
Big, huge profit. All right. Well, next up would be quotes, and I'm sure we have a ton of them. Do you have any?
Yeah. Like, I mean, Jack has a lot, but I like the when he says to Harry, "You're the expert. I just work here." You know, and then we kind of talked about the pop quiz with the shoot the hostage.
Yeah. I have one from Jack, and it says, "Will the mystery guest please sign in?"
Mm-hmm.
When they realize that the bomber is in the freight elevator below them. And I'll throw this one. Doug, played by Alan Ruck. "They're the police. Hey, your taxes are paying their salaries. We die, they got to take a pay cut."
Yeah. Yeah, it was good.
Cute ones like that.
And then, like, going back to the shoot the hostage, like, Harry, when Jack is like, "Let's do something. What if we could do something about the hostages?" Harry says, "We're not going to shoot them, right?"
Harry, we're not going to go start shooting the hostages now, are we? next one would be from Howard Payne himself. And he says, "Poor people are crazy, Jack. I'm eccentric." So that's him justifying his craziness.
I like Annie's, like, Jack's asking her if she's okay driving the bus. And she's like, "Oh, sure. It's just like driving a really big Pinto."
This is the conversation between Jack and Harry as they're going down the elevator shaft. And Jack goes, "Tell me again, Harry, why did I take this job?" Harry goes, "Oh, come on. 30 more years of this, you get a tiny pension and a cheap gold watch." Jack's like, "Cool."
Yeah, that's some more foreshadowing there, too.
Yeah.
With the watch. Ortiz asks Jack, "Do you have any luck with the bomb?" And he goes, "Yeah, it didn't go off."
All right, and this is the one that everybody knows and is most quotable, but not the complete thing. It's from Howard Payne. It's in the very beginning. "Pop quiz, hotshot. There's a bomb on a bus. Once the bus goes over 50 miles an hour, the bomb is armed. If it drops below 50, it blows up. What do you do? What do you do?" So that's over the Jack's cell phone, which at that time, cell phones were not... Oh, no, it wasn't on the
phone. It was a pay phone. Yeah, yeah.
Which always made me laugh, too, because, like, how did Jack figure out or think that it was the bomber calling?
Yeah.
Couldn't the phone just have been ringing? Hold on, let me get this call.
How did he hear the phone over the explosion? He's right by, like, the...
Yeah, it's still on fire, burning. But you can
hear this little payphone.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go.
But there were cell phones, too. Howard had one.
A mobile phone.
Yeah. He had a mobile phone back then, and they weren't very common back in the early 90s.
And the guy in the car, like, Jack took his.
I thought that was a car phone. An actual car phone.
Yeah, maybe.
Car phones, but I seen those in the 80s.
Yeah. My next quote is from Annie at the end. "You're not going to get mushy on me, are you?" And Jack says, "Maybe, yeah, I think I might." She says, "Yeah, I hope not, because, you know, relationships that start under intense circumstances, they never last. I've done extensive research on this." I guess it wasn't at the end, it was at the airport, like when they got out of the bus.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like when they were, it was okay. You know, everything settles down. Yeah. Next one, yet again, from Howard Payne. I don't know why I like quoting him. Maybe it's because of just how quacky he is. "I hate talking to negotiators, Jack. They talk to you like they're your best friend and they don't even know you." That's the point. They don't. Yeah.
We've kind of gone over all mine.
Okay, I have a few more which are funny. Steven says, "Did you have any luck with the bomb?" And you already said, "Yeah, it didn't go off." Okay, we got that one already down on the list. I forgot. Jack, when he sees the bomb, "Fuck me." And Doug goes, "Oh, darn."
Because he's
relaying the messages to his boss and Harry. No, it's Harry. Oh, this is the funniest, though. This is like just Doug being Doug, and Alan Ruck pulls it off. But it's like, you know, he's trying to be nice about the situation, but it just comes off as silly the way it comes out. It's like him going, "It's okay. If you need to you just go ahead and vomit. Because the lady was, like, feeling ill and sick. Yeah. I have a few notes about the movie itself. I already talked about the whole Giganter thing midway, okay. But the bus's number is 2525. I don't know if there's any significance behind that. But if you listeners that are out there, if you're a bunch of speedheads and you love this movie and you embrace your fandom and know something that I don't, please tell us when we give you how to send in your feedback. The issue I had in the very beginning of the actual movie with the cops were knowing and trying to help. They should have had an escort in front of them at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. You know how when the bus started and they knew and they caught wind of it, why weren't they in front?
Like, they should have been
in front and clearing the way at that point. You know, I guess LA's taxes aren't really paying too much. Yeah. Their officers. Or they were too busy at the donut shop. I don't know.
One other note I had was that Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves have both admitted to having crushes on each other during the movie. So that's part of why I think their chemistry is so good.
It does ring through and you can tell. That's
even cool. Like the look when he's going under the bus, like they say so much in that look they exchange.
They do. All right. Well, we're almost towards the end, but with any of these movies that we do cover, we give this movie a rating. For a while, I wasn't doing ratings, but why not? Why not just give this a rating? Kelly, did you give it a rating or no?
I'd probably rate it a 9. Like, it's right up there.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Good action movie. I mean, it's one of my favorites.
To me, it fills all my needs as far as action, adventure, especially with the dialogue in it. It kind of works out. And then the sequences themselves. And I don't really give high ratings too much lately. So 9.5 for me. But that's just based on... I just love this movie, and it's my go-to movie for, like, if I wanted to have something on in the background, and I could just quote it as it goes. And, you know, I've already mentioned how this is one of the movies that really enticed me, because I think it was during the pandemic in the very beginning, I was watching a lot of movies, and I was trying to think, it's like, if I want to do another podcast, what would it be? And I think this movie was one of them, linked in with Die Hard and a whole bunch of others.
Yeah.
And I said, action. I don't think that many people are covering really action or adventure or fantasy and that kind of movies. Mm-hmm. All those things that make us want to go to the movies at times. So, with that, did you choose a guilty pleasure movie or movies that you would like to suggest?
Well, I mean, like, so I picked one for, like, Sandra Bullock. My guilty pleasure movie of hers is While You Were Sleeping. That's, like, my favorite of hers, and it's not maybe as well known as some of them.
Oh, I love that movie, too.
I consider it a holiday movie. Like, I watch it every year at Christmas.
Yeah, because it's a holiday movie. Yeah, definitely a holiday movie.
Yeah.
And that's with Bill Pullman.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's who's really the brother? I'm forgetting.
Oh, I forget his name. He's
in a ton of movies, but he's the one that is always sleeping. Him.
Like, Gallagher or Gallahan? Something.
Oh,
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gallagher, I think, is the last name. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Well, I could go with a Sandra Bullock movie, too, something I would suggest, something that I like, too, but everybody's going to be like, you're weird or strange for a guy liking it, but Miss Congeniality.
Yeah.
I've already mentioned it. I liked it. I always, and that was the one, because the fact that she plays a tough FBI agent who loves her meat, doesn't really know how to dress, and then she comes out, and they're able to doll her up, and then she comes through, and I thought it was pretty cool. All right, well, as we come to a close, we would like to know where listeners could hear you. Obviously, you've been on here a couple of times.
Yeah, so, covered Aliens with you and Wendy.
Yep.
And I was on Wilhelm with Ben, and... we did our favorite space movies. So that was another fun one.
And then you were also in Watched It in the 80s with Damien.
I did. She's having a baby because I work as a labor and delivery nurse. So it was kind of a fun movie to cover with him.
Awesome. Well,
and then I just recently was on the Handmaid's Tale cast with Podcastica, like this week's episode.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool. So check that out. I do like to suggest Podcastica Network too. Mm-hmm. And with that, you could hear me on the Podcastica Network. I do Sandman Cast with Jamie Dimmick, our friend Jamie Dimmick. Our friend Lara's been on it as well. It's coming to a close. By the time this comes out, we've already finished it. But if you are into the Netflix series Sandman or even the comic book and have watched the series and your thoughts about adaptation from comic to screen, listen, give it a listen if you're really interested. We would love to have other listeners get back to us about it, even though we would have finished the actual podcast. You can also hear me on Panels to Pixels podcast on the Next Level Online Radio Podcast Network. There, Steve and I, my co-host Steve and I, we cover everything comic book related that's adapted to TV and film, as well as anime. Currently, we'll probably be finishing up She-Hulk, and Umbrella Academy will probably be in the midst of finishing up and then going into Werewolf by Night. Mm-hmm. After that, we're not sure entirely. We're going to find another one. We might do a short stint and do Paper Girls that is out on Amazon Prime, and maybe ask our friend Mr. Blog, who used to be on Podcast Network, see if he would like to jump in and talk about that, because I like the idea of that. You could also hear me on Fantasy Picks Movie Edition. That can be found on the Pirate Core Entertainment Network. Rob, Joe, Ralph, Zach, myself. It's kind of like a football fantasy pick. Awesome. And we've done one with Steven Spielberg so far. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you couldn't pick the same one as the other person movie-wise, mm-hmm. what was an Oscar, what had the great music, things of that nature. So listen to that. I had a hard time with one that won Oscars, or at least was nominated for an Oscar. I was like, Joe is trying to feed me, so if you want to get a good chuckle about me kind of screwing up during a podcast that is not mine, more than welcome to check that one out. That was fun. We also will be covering for Halloween The Mummy and how to fix that particular movie. It's a Tom Cruise movie that came out in 2017, and it didn't do well. So it didn't live up to the expectations of those that wanted to watch the movie. So when Fantasy Picks Movie Edition cover a movie like that, we think of how could we fix that movie? And Ben Beck, who mentioned it when we just finished the Community podcast on the Next Level podcast online network with Wilhelm. We did Community, so you could hear me there. But he said, when I mentioned it, get rid of Tom Cruise. But there are other actors in there that you could change possibly, maybe story-wise, because how the story was written, maybe the music, maybe the action parts or effects and how they created the mummy in that particular movie. So many things that you could change to maybe adjust it to your liking. So check that out, Fantasy Picks Movie Edition. Okay. Awesome. It's fun.
That sounds fun.
It does. Well, and we talked about feedback before, and for you to submit your feedback, all you have to do is go to our Facebook group, and that would be facebook.com/adrenalinecinemapodcast. There you will find an image. I've already posted an image and wallpaper for you guys to see. And under the image, I say, just leave your thoughts in the comments below and we'll read them. I haven't seen any, but if you do put them in for this particular movie, I will read them on a later episode if need be. I definitely will put out your feedback there. You could also email us at adrenalinecinemapodcast@gmail.com. And that's very simple. All you have to do is send out a regular texted email. If you want, you can record yourself and then send it as an attachment, and we'll pop it right in the actual podcast as we're recording and listen to it and give our thoughts. All you have to do is just send it to adrenalinecinemapodcast@gmail.com. And plus, try to answer any questions that you have. If you have any questions about the movie, and then we are recording at that time, or even later on, if we get it later on, we'll answer that question. I might just have that other guest come on and say, hey, here's your answer.
Yeah.
But since you are subscribed to a podcast app of choice, if there's any review available, please do, especially an Apple podcast. We really would appreciate it. It really gives us more listeners. And the best way to get more listeners, too, is word of mouth. So if you really like what we're doing, please tell a friend and just tell them where you can hear us. We could be heard on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon Music, I believe, a whole bunch of them that are out there. So any player of choice, I think there's over 30 that I'm on, but just recommend it. So, and as always, for the Pirate Core Entertainment Network, I highly recommend everybody go to the Pirate Core website, which would be piratecoreentertainment.com. There, and you could see all the other artists that are out there that we have on the network. Kirk Manley, who does the artwork for Adrenaline Cinema Podcast, Panels to Pixel Podcast, as well as the Pirate Core Entertainment Network itself, the website. That's all Kirk's work there. You could actually find links there to get in touch with Kirk, because he is an artist and he does a lot of posters for conventions and things of that nature. You could hire him out and you could just email him and say, hey, what would it cost for you to do this kind of picture for me? Or can I see a catalog? And you could purchase some of his artwork too online. So check Kirk Manley's stuff out there on the network's website, as well as Run for Your Lives podcast with Daphne and Paik, as they cover large monster movies, horror movies, natural disaster movies, and anything that makes you run for your life. So check them out. Links are always there. All you have to do is click on their particular podcast, just like Watch did in the 80s with Damien and his many guests. So because he covers everything within the 80s when it comes to movies.
Yeah,
I still have genre. Yeah, it's a great genre stuff to do. And there's so many movies you could go over, as well as TV. And he's done, I think he's done Family Ties.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed that one. I've been badgering him to do the movie Explorers, which actually has River Phoenix in it.
Yeah,
so I want to do that one. So I'm still poking Damien to see if he'll get me beyond. and lastly, I've already mentioned it before. I was already on it. Fantasy Picks Movie Edition with Rob and his guests. Just have to go to the website, check their links, and follow that there. I already gave you the description of what they cover, so it's fun. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to thank you for listening. And I want to thank Kelly for being on and suggesting this film. Thanks, Kelly. Yeah.
Well, thanks. It was a lot of fun.
All right. Well, everybody, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.